the trophy to the Republicans so it can be displayed on Steve Scalise's desk. This is USA Radio News.
Staples knows that when the leave behinds for your sales call get left behind at your office, it's time. When you need to print 30 pages and you're 300 miles from the office, it's time. And when the intern packed the Harrington file, not the Farrington file.
Ugh, my bad.
It's definitely time. And it's times like these when you can count on Staples. Access your files from email, the cloud, or USB, and then print, copy, fax, or scan them, and get back to business fast. Visit your nearby Staples. It's pro time.
This is Shaquille O'Neal.
And the Shaquettes.
Reminding you that anytime.
Anytime.
Is a good time.
Good time.
For the cooling, drying, freshening of Gold Bond powder spray. Like after the gym.
Or a crowded elevator ride.
Or golf.
Or working with farm animals.
Or a hard day's work.
Like sportscasting.
You said it, ladies. Stay cool with Gold Bond powder spray.
Stay cool.
The two escaped inmates who were desperately sought after they killed a pair of prison guards in Georgia on Tuesday are back in custody. Tennessee Highway Patrol spokesman Bill Miller saying Donnie Russell Rowe and Ricky Dubose were captured in Tennessee yesterday following a car chase that was followed by a foot chase.
The pursuit lasted for approximately 10 miles, where the suspect vehicle during that time was firing numerous rounds at the Rutherford County deputy sheriffs.
The two inmates ended up fleeing to a nearby home where they were taken into custody after they were held at gunpoint by those homeowners who legally possessed guns. President Trump will be laying out his policy on Cuba in a speech in Miami in a few hours, expected to leave in place many of the changes made by the Obama administration, but it will restrict the ability of Americans to travel to the island and will ban U.S. companies from having commercial dealings with Cuban enterprises controlled by its military. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Sorry for that. Unfortunately, I could not change the volume, so you heard it in high volume. I'm Pat Smits, and I'm bringing you the weather before I bring you my program. And the first thing is look out the window, because even though they said that there was a chance of thunderstorms, actually it has been raining, certainly where I am around Rhone Valley, most of the day, this morning, this afternoon. And we can look forward tonight to a chance of thunderstorms between 30%, then maybe showers. And I am getting a... I don't sound good on this. I don't know why I can't get the volume to play better. But in any event, that's what's happening. Not looking forward to the weekend because, again, tomorrow there's a 40% chance of thunderstorms and areas of fog. High of about 83 degrees tomorrow night, low about 70 degrees, which is obviously not low. Nice sleeping weather, except, again, another 40% chance of thunderstorms. Into Sunday, even a greater chance of thunderstorms, at least 50%. And Sunday night, the same thing. Heavy rain is predicted for Monday, about an 80% chance of heavy rain on Monday. And then Monday night, again, chance of heavy rain. So that's what's happening with our weather. And we'll be back after I play this spot about diets. Don't let it discourage you, but be back. And we'll talk about what's happening in the law.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Sorry if that's loud. I can't seem to modulate it, and we'll see if we can't get that fixed. In any event, I'm Pat Smits. The program It's the Law, and we're going to be talking about some of the things that have been going on in the last week, and in fact, some of the cases. One of the things that has come up is whether or not trust accounts, whether or not somebody misuses money in trust accounts, whether or not that's money laundering. And there was a New Jersey attorney. He was disbarred, and he was accused of helping himself to large sums of client funds. And he did succeed, however, even though he was disbarred, he did succeed in defeating one of the most serious charges against him, and that was in the process it prompted the appeals court to shed some light on how the money laundering statute applies to attorney trust account misuse. So that, you know, there is always the concern that attorneys, if they misuse trust funds, believe me, they will be disbarred, but whether or not there could also be a charge of money laundering. We do know that Mark Kasowitz, the founding partner at this law firm, is now representing our president. And the apparently the law department, Office of Senior Vice President and General Counsel at Rutgers University, proved to be an asset to the institution in 2016. It was heavily engaged in many employment issues that arise at an institution that employed about 27,000 people. So they're, you know, giving kudos to that office. Now, one of the things, and we should do, talking about kudos, we should really give a shout-out to Sanofi, because apparently the legal department at Sanofi U.S. has provided valuable pro bono services in recent years, and that was largely through its work with the pro bono partnership. And I think that people would be surprised at how many private attorneys handle many pro bono matters. And I'm not talking about situations where clients just don't pay. But I know that many of us volunteer for representation of clients that need representation and can't afford it. Somehow none of this good stuff is ever brought up. So I thought I'd bring that up about Sanofi and, you know, applaud their efforts. So what are the cases that have been approved for publication this week? Well, there is one. And the legal issue on appeal, this was the appeal Larkins versus Soltaire, Jr., and the legal issue on appeal is whether the state comptroller is obligated to disclose his reasons for selecting the North Bergen Board of Education for a performance audit before commencing the audit. And they indicated by statute, the Act does not impose any such requirement. I'm going to just play another sponsorship spot to see if we're back and having the same problems with sound.
You're listening to 100. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
No, I know. Okay. We're back, trying to get some sound so you don't get drowned out here. Any event, we were talking about the case where whether or not the state comptroller has to disclose his reasons for selecting anyone for a performance audit before commencing the audit. And this was the appellate division said that the statute, or called the Act, does not impose any such requirement. And to hold otherwise would undermine the purpose of the Act and render meaningless an audit's unambiguous statutory obligation to provide full assistance and cooperation with any audit, meaning what they call the auditee. So the Board of Education in that case would be the auditee, and they have a statutory obligation to provide full assistance and cooperation with the audit. And it would also cause perhaps unduly delay the conduct of audits if they had to be provided notice ahead of time. So guess what? The same thing with attorneys, although usually with attorneys they will give us some notice so we can get our books out on a table so somebody can come in and audit them. But they can do, and they do random audits of attorney trust accounts. And usually, I shouldn't say this because I'll have an audit notice quickly, but they usually do and pick on, or some people would not say pick on, but those of us who are solo practitioners seem to get audited more often. And the reason, it's a good reason, of course, they do random audits to make sure that attorneys are maintaining their trust accounts properly. So the there are, you know, checks, and as I said, I talked about the disbarred attorney who then was accused of money laundering, and I'm not sure, you know, how that attorney was picked up for, meaning picked out, I guess I should say, for helping himself to large sums of client funds. But that is an absolute prohibition. Attorneys can't borrow from client funds. They can't, you know, commingle client funds, one client to another. It's very tightly controlled. In fact, I keep all of my client funds in separate sub-accounts, so there's no possible way that something could inadvertently, somebody's account could inadvertently be charged something they shouldn't or paid something that they shouldn't be paid. There was another case, real estate, anyone interested in real estate and creditors and debtors' rights should take a look at this case. This was a chancery case, which means that other chancery trial judges do not have to follow it, but it was a published opinion. And it's JNH Funding Corporation versus Highland House Condominium Association. And it was a tax sale certificate foreclosure action. So you have to be interested in that type of thing before this case would be of interest to you. But in any event, the plaintiff filed a motion to vacate the purported redemption of the tax sale certificate by the defendant condominium association, and apparently, which was not at the time it redeemed the certificate, the owner of the subject property. So the defendant condominium association had redeemed the certificate based on inaccurate representation and representations of the plaintiff's attorney that it would be permitted under the statute to redeem the tax sale certificate. Then in the time between the purported redemption of the tax sale certificate and the plaintiff's motion being filed, the defendant condominium association, which had maintained its own separate foreclosure action against the property owner based on unpaid condominium expense payments, so they had obtained a final judgment and subsequently purchased the property at the time of the sheriff's sale. So what happened is the condominium association had its own separate foreclosure action, and they received a final judgment, and they had a foreclosure action pending because the plaintiffs had not paid their association dues. So what happened is the trial court held that despite the condominium association's subsequent purchase of the property, at the time it attempted to redeem the tax sale certificate, it was not a party permitted to do so under the statute. And as a result, that vacated the redemption. So the trial court also rejected the condominium association's argument that it should be considered a mortgagee and thus eligible to redeem the tax sale certificate under the statute. So, in other words, they did not win because they could not do it under the statute. So one of the things that this shows me as an attorney is I would not handle one of these things with a 10-foot pole. And it also shows, or should show people, that you really need an attorney experienced in the area of law that you're dealing with, not just someone because they're an attorney. Because we all, very few general practitioners, and even the general practitioners I know will not handle everything. For example, bankruptcy is a specialty. Trust and estates really should be a specialty because of the taxes involved. I'm not saying that a general attorney can't prepare a will, but there are real specific things that need to be done. And once again, if I'm talking about a will, I'm reminding all my listeners that if you don't have a will and a current power of attorney, you really need to, and also a medical directive. I happen to be asked that recently, and, you know, frankly, I don't remember where my medical directive is. I have also a reminder that I need to go back, take a look, and make sure that it's really up to date. So that's, you know, so important, and I hope everybody checks, make sure you have a will. One of the things in New Jersey is that it's much easier to probate if, in fact, someone has a will. And I'll have John Manfreda on again and talk about that. But take a look. And no one knows when they might need a medical power of attorney. So that is also something that should be up to date. So a federal judge has declined to dismiss a lawsuit filed by the U.S. Department of Labor accusing the operator of 17 Houlihan's restaurants in New Jersey and New York of illegally pocketing portions of servers and bartenders' tips and failing to pay them for working overtime. This is really important, very important case, because I've heard it. I've heard it from people, especially from people working in some restaurants, and right here in Flemington, I had someone who said that where she worked, the manager took the tips. When one employee pocketed some tips, the employee was fired. And so, you know, there certainly waiters and waitresses have to pay out some of the other staff in restaurants. But the operators of these restaurants have no right to illegally pocket portions of either the servers' or the bartenders' tips. Servers meaning the men and women who wait on us when we go to the restaurants. And also, they are required to pay overtime. Now, in New Jersey, it would be ludicrous for someone in a restaurant not to agree to pay overtime, because the salary that the servers get in New Jersey is not even minimum wage. They're able, and it may have changed, but I know for a long time they were only required to pay them about $2 an hour, not even minimum wage, the assumption being that they made the money with tips. So another issue is another suit in the District Court of New Jersey. It's stated that the United States primary certifying body for osteopathic physicians is set to proceed to discovery in a fraud and antitrust suit in the District of New Jersey. And this is after a federal judge in Camden denied the association's motions to dismiss a suit by doctors. So this that suit is going to proceed here in New Jersey. The state appellate panel here in New Jersey has indefinitely suspended the law license of William Baroni Jr. And if you remember that name, you'll remember that he was a former Port Authority official and one of the key figures behind the Bridgegate scandal that helped, you know, well, at least some people, and I think most people attribute that to crushing the presidential hopes of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Now, as we know, Chris Christie was never convicted, or I'm not saying he wasn't implicated, but he was never never any criminal charges against him. And Bridget Kelly and William Barone were the, depending on how you looked at this, were the victims. Perpetrators, yes, and also the only people that really suffered. But in any event, apparently this Barone was admitted to the bar in New York, and he's suspended from practice in New York. Now, if he also had a law license in New Jersey, there should be a period of time, but he will also lose his license in New Jersey. And in fact, even if he didn't lose his license in New York, New Jersey could, in fact, suspend or revoke his license to practice here. There's a question about public records, and that was Stop and Shop Supermarkets versus the City of Bergen, and it was an appellate division case, and the portion of the opinion that addresses the Open Public Records Act, and that was, I believe, the only portion of the case or the opinion that, in fact, was published. And the appellate division holds that the OPRA, Open Public Records Act, OPRA, is authorized to allow a party who has been denied access to records to obtain access to those records and counsel fees that's authorized under OPRA if the litigation causes the production of those records. In other words, if you win, you're entitled to the records and can get counsel fees. Now, in this case, because the plaintiff had already obtained the responsive records before it filed its declaratory judgment action, its action was moot when filed, and therefore the plaintiff was not entitled to counsel fees. So what the court said is the plaintiff cannot avoid the prescription against litigating moot issues by bringing a declaratory judgment action. In other words, if something's moot, you can't continue and proceed to litigate it. And that's what the issue was here. They had already received the records, therefore they could not file a declaratory judgment action. Now, if the case had been proceeding and then the records had been received, at that point they could have continued to seek legal fees for the work that had to go in before the records were produced. So that's important because you can't just file suit unless there's, you know, a basis for doing it. So now a federal judge in Camden has tossed some of the claims for malpractice and breach of fiduciary duty against Archer and Greiner and two of its lawyers. And this was arising from their representation of the former general counsel of a vacation timeshare company. And Archer and Greiner is one of the largest firm in South Jersey. And, of course, they have offices. They also have offices in Pennsylvania. In fact, many of the Philadelphia firms also have offices in South Jersey. So if you're talking about large firms, if you're talking about all the lawyers, there are many larger firms in Philadelphia, but may only have one or two lawyers in an office in New Jersey. Now, there was an investment advisor's legal malpractice claims against the New Jersey firm Bressler, Amory, and Ross, and apparently they're precluded by prior arbitration against his employer before federal regulators. And so that's what the appellate division ruled, that because of arbitration, that barred the claim. Some good news, we had Judge Christie this week nominated five lawyers to be judges of the Superior Court. And that's good news because we do not have enough judges. Most of them are really overworked, and certainly we need more judges in this vicinage. And by this vicinage, I mean Somerset, Hunterdon, and Warren County. Well, let me take a break and play a couple more spots, and then I'll be back.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, hello again. This is Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. And I'm talking about some of the things that legal news and cases that have come up recently as far as decisions. And so far I've been talking about published opinions because those are precedent unless it's a published opinion from a trial judge. And in those cases, other trial judges do not have to follow a published opinion by a trial judge. And, of course, the appellate division and Supreme Court are not obligated to follow these. In fact, the appellate division, there are cases where they have two different panels have different decisions. It doesn't happen often. What happens in the federal system, it's not unusual to have two circuits deal with the same issue and come down with different opinions. And that often is what leads to the U.S. Supreme Court granting cert on a case and making a decision. When two different circuits, appellate courts, make a decision on basically the same issue and the decision is different and significant difference so that the Supreme Court wants to take that case up and make the decision. So that there is a difference, of course, if it's a state court, and decisions in New Jersey can be very different than decisions on the same issue in New York or Pennsylvania or Delaware. And so unless it's a constitutional issue, the federal courts most likely won't get involved. And when I say most likely, it depends. If the litigants are living in two different states and there are certain other reasons, including constitutional reasons, that the federal courts will get involved. Now, it's interesting because, you know, they regulate everything, or there's a statute for everything. And apparently the state is closer to imposing regulations on the practice of telemedicine, where patients remotely receive medical evaluations or counseling from their health care providers. So this, they're going to seek to regulate, the state legislature is going to seek to regulate that. Don't know and haven't seen the basis, and it may not be the legislature. It could be one of the departments in the executive branch, because if there are regulations, that could be not coming from the legislature. It actually could come from one of the departments. Now, so what else is happening? Well, there's this criminal case, State versus McDuffie. Again, an appellate division decision. Judge Lighthouse, I never know how to pronounce her name, really excellent jurist on the appellate division, and often will read her opinions, even if they have nothing to do with family law, just because her analysis is always spot on, and whether or not you agree with her opinions, you certainly understand how she reached the conclusion that her panel reached. And this was a case where the appellate division had to look at the defendant's attack on the state that exercised privilege. And the privilege was refraining from disclosing information regarding details related to a global positioning system. Now, I'm not sure I knew what a global positioning system was, and probably most people don't. And we usually talk about a GPS, and that's what we're talking about, a GPS tracking device. And in this case, the GPS was used to prove their involvement in two burglaries. Now, the defendants filed an appeal on constitutional grounds, and the court rejected their constitutional attacks and upheld the privilege granted by the New Jersey Rules of Evidence 516 and by the statute. And so that what they said is they defined the guidelines reviewed when weighing disclosure in light of the asserted privilege. So in other words, it was they had to do weighing between the two. So here they include whether the defendant demonstrates a particularized need for disclosure related to advance a stated, in other words, to advance a stated defense, whether the opportunity to cross-examine the officer asserting non-disclosure based on principle satisfies the defendant's need to challenge the credibility of testifying witnesses, and whether or not the law enforcement provided required collaborating the evidence extrinsic to the GPS to protect the defendant's rights of confrontation and fair trial, and then fourth, whether the defendant has the opportunity to provide expert testimony to attack the evidence without disclosure of the requested information. In other words, in this case, were the defendants able to provide expert testimony to attack whatever evidence was obtained through the GPS tracking? And the court said yes. In this case, the defendants did not meet their burden. So a brewery wholesaler has to pay a $2 million fine for underselling. And this was a craft beer wholesaler, and they agreed to pay $2 million and also surrender its license to settle claims of anti-competitive trade practices. So that's I don't have anything more, at least I'll look and see. I'm not sure I have anything more in that case. by a pretty hefty fine, and apparently there was they engaged in what was considered anti-competitive trade practices. So since they don't have a license, they won't be practicing any kind of trade. So again, a U.S. federal court, this was a U.S. magistrate judge in Newark, has approved a $1.2 million settlement of an overtime suit against Galaxy Recycling of Jersey City on behalf of residential trash collectors who claimed they were denied overtime pay. So this is, you know, employees are no longer just letting this go, and they are asserting their rights, and if they're hourly employees, they have a right to be paid overtime. Now, the federal judge, this is interesting, has dismissed a putative class action case against the clothing company J. Crew. And the suit claimed that the company issued receipts that were too revealing. And the federal judge said, nope, not so, and dismissed it. So there was a U.S. Supreme Court recent decision in Kindred Nursing Centers versus Clark, which called in the question of the continuing viability of the New Jersey Supreme Court's decision in a case, Adelesi versus U.S. Legal Services Group, and that was under the Federal Arbitration Act. So that called into question that decision. And of course, as we know, the U.S. Supreme Court, if they decide, that will take precedence over any state court. Again, there was one case, another case, some criminal law cases have been published recently, and this was a case, again, appellate division, Messiano was the judge who wrote it, and in that case, the grand jury indicted the defendant on a single count, charging her with aggravated assault by throwing a bodily fluid. So with that, if you want to hear more, I'll be back after just playing a couple, maybe one, spot. I want to make sure to get them all in.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Okay, we're back and talking about, I certainly hope that was picked up. I'm having some trouble today with the quality of the sound. Not sure if it's me or what's happening. But anyway, I was talking about the appellate division case, criminal case, decision opinion written by Judge Messano. The grand jury in that case indicted the defendant on a single count, charging her with aggravated assault by throwing a bodily fluid. Now, the statute provides that a person who throws a bodily fluid at a law enforcement officer who is in the performance of his or her duties or otherwise purposely subjects such employee to contact with a bodily fluid commits an aggravated assault. Then, if the victim suffers bodily injury, this shall be a crime of the third degree. Otherwise, it's a crime of the fourth degree. Obviously, first degree, second degree, third degree, and fourth degree. Nobody wants to be charged with a crime, but believe me, you'd much rather be charged with a fourth degree than a first degree. In this case, the state alleged that the defendant spat at another inmate and it landed on a corrections officer. And the defendant in this case moved to dismiss the indictment, arguing that the prosecutor failed to charge the grand jury regarding the statute's requisite mental state and also failed to present clearly exculpatory evidence, which she said negated her guilt. And the case to look at as precedent would be State versus Hogan, a case, again, by the New Jersey Supreme Court decided in 1996. So this evidence in this case included statements of inmates and the disciplinary report of the investigative corrections officer, and that confirmed that the defendant intended to spit at a fellow inmate, not the officer. So the judge denied the motion to dismiss, concluding the evidence did not meet the standard enunciated in the Hogan case. That was the Supreme Court case in 1996. But he did not resolve what mental state was required under the statute or whether the prosecutor's instructions were appropriate. So thereafter, the defendant pled guilty, and the court concluded the state must prove that the defendant acted purposefully and that the doctrine of transferred intent, there is a statute, transferred intent, cannot elevate the act of spitting, even if an offensive act under the criminal code, into an aggravated assault unless the officer was the intended target. And the defendant's motion to dismiss should have been granted because the prosecution failed to inform the grand jury, the grand jurors, of course, of the requisite culpable mental state. So this is important because it's a question of what was the requisite mental state. And, of course, in this case, the witnesses testified that the inmate's clear intent was simply one thing when the state was trying to use it for something else. So that, you know, it's not a statute that's used often. You know, that doesn't mean you should go out and get into a spitting fight with your spouse, of course, but it is certainly limited to only limited to employees, certain employees, and that was, you know, this is a crime depending on the severity, but certainly if you did something to a police officer, that would fall under this. And the question was when the inmate intended to spit on a fellow inmate, not something we think is a good idea, but was that the type of aggravated assault that the court, when they signed this legislation? And the answer was no. She didn't intend on doing anything to the other inmate. So apparently there's been, the appeals court has ordered a new trial from the for a former Rutgers professor who's now serving prison time for having sexual relationship with a mentally disabled man. And this was someone, female, and the case was State versus Stubbenfield, and it was this appellate division, Judge Koblitz, and in that case, the court reversed the defendant's two convictions for first-degree aggravated sexual assault of a physically incapacitated young man. And they did so because they found that the defendant was unfairly hampered in her attempt to present evidence that she did not know or should have known that he was mentally incapacitated. The defendant argued to the jury that the victim could not communicate and consent to actual sexual activity. And the court erred in excluding a defense expert's exhaustive videotape evaluation of the victim. other defense evidence was excluded based on the incorrect hearsay analysis. And so in a mitigating, or I should say in a misguided effort to limit evidence of the controversial method of facilitated communication. So apparently these errors were enough to require a new trial. And obviously the defendants would rather have the judge, in this case the final judge, do something other than what the judge did. And that was that on that case. So what else is happening? I'm pretty dull stuff this week. Now, civil immunity for first responders. The legislative panel studying that has recommended passage of a bill that would provide immunity from civil damages for first responders who cause property damage during an emergency and forced entrance. So, this is not just volunteers. It's just across the board. And the issue is if this bill will get passed, what are the implications? What are the ramifications? But what happens, it looks to be that what will happen is there will be a bill, I'm trying to think, there will be a bill, a statute, that specifically does, in fact, protect them. Well, there's some discussion about underused and underutilized discovery. In other words, what the courts are saying and what makes sense is try to agree to do some discovery, meaning finding documents, etc., before you have to have that meeting. And so you don't have any kind of surprises. So I think we're going to pretty much turn things over to the news. I guess not quite yet, but in another minute or so. So what else? There's the state Supreme Court has been asked to reinstate a $166 million verdict against the state in a case of a child severely abused by his father after the child welfare authorities left him in his father's custody. These are tragic cases. Nobody wants something like this to happen. And very often, of course, there are disputes as to where the child was supposed to be, if they're kidnapped, and other disputes, excuse me. The appellate division has ordered a new trial for a defendant convicted of passing bad checks. Well, how did that happen? Well, after finding that the trial judge misapplied the law on self-representation in criminal cases, there was an order for a new trial. And in that case, the litigant was convicted of passing cases where somebody was bitten. Alrighty, what else do we have? We're getting close to the end here, and I want to be on time. There was one family law case published in June, and this was interesting. It was Judge Mala. Judge Mala was our trial judge here in Hunterdon, and he was a presiding judge, and very, bright, articulate, good judge. He was then transferred to Somerset County. He was a presiding judge, and he has been elevated at least temporarily to the appellate division, and already we have an opinion written by Judge Mala, and doesn't surprise me. So what he said in the court's review of a reinstated final restraining order entered pursuant to the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act, the appellate division concluded that the court may not sua sponte reinstate a final restraining order absent an application by the plaintiff. Well, what do we mean cannot do something sua sponte or does something sua sponte? That means that no one asked the judge to do this. He or she just did it. So the court said, nope, can't do that. And the reason for that, it's a good reason. The reason for that is due process requires that a party seeking to reinstate a final restraining order file a motion so that the defendant may have an opportunity to adequately defend against the reimposition of a final restraining order. So in this case, what happened is the defendant was deprived of due process because the trial court that vacated the restraining order then reinstated the restraining order. And they talk about a couple of cases that are important, Carfango versus Carfango, that was a 1995 Chancery case, and then sua sponte it reviewed some other records, but that was the really important thing here. The judge just can't go back and sua sponte, enter an order or dismiss an order without the at least one client saying, look, I may not want to be married any longer, or I may not want this or that, but you have to give the defendant notice, and that's what's really important. And that is the end of my program. I will go to the news, and hopefully people will join in next week. Stay tuned for the sports guys, because the sports guys are going to have a guest today, and I think it'll be a very interesting program.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jules McKinney.
The verdict has been reached in the case of the woman accused of encouraging her high school boyfriend to commit suicide via text message.
This court, having reviewed the evidence and applied the law thereto, now finds you guilty on the indictment charging you with the involuntary manslaughter of the person Conrad Roy III.
Prosecutors said the now 20-year-old Michelle Carter pushed her boyfriend to kill himself through a series of text messages. The judge said the messages showed reckless conduct by Carter. Roy died of carbon monoxide poisoning in his pickup truck. Carter is free on bail and will be sentenced at a later time. President Trump is again calling the Russia meddling investigation a witch hunt. On Twitter this morning, Trump said he is being investigated by, quote, the man who told me to fire the FBI director. That appears to be a reference to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. This is USA Radio News.
Kyle is a dog trainer.
Okay, sit. Good boy.
In his personal time, Kyle's a personal trainer.
One, two, good.
Kyle knows how to get results, but when it comes to mortgages, he's less confident.
Guilty as charged.
Fortunately, there's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It's simple, so he can understand the details and know he's getting the right mortgage. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply.